Well, hello, this is Frank, and this is my show. I call it Santa Barbara Cyclist. And we talk about bicycles tonight. We talk about local politics. My guest tonight, Kristen Snedden, running for City Council in District 4. We've got a lot of issues to talk about, everything from bicycles to Measure C, the sales tax, to the future of State Street, AUDs and ADUs. We cover it all. Let's listen.
Hi, I'm Kristen Snedden. I'm running for City Council, District 4.
Kristen, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Kristen, you had a little event at Lois Kapp's house about a week ago.
Yeah.
What a turnout you had.
Yes.
What support you have.
It's true.
You had to feel very gratified with the turnout, the support.
Yes, I did. I'm very honored. I've been able to gain a broad base of support in a short amount of time, and it's been really incredible, actually. I'm humbled and honored by the turnout and by the support.
I would imagine how the younger Kapps.
Yes, Laura.
Laura.
Yes. And she's on the school district.
She's on the
board,
school district.
And she's been very supportive. She's also very supportive of environmental issues. And it's been great to have her support. Yeah.
I watched her introduce you to the crowd. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying to myself, if I had been in your shoes, I don't know what I could have said that would have done a better job than what she did.
No, I was really stunned, actually.
Yeah.
And I did have to think for a minute, well, what can I add to that? It was very...
How do I top that?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, City Council here in Santa Barbara, have you ever... This is your first time in a political environment?
I mean, I have served on, I've been 6 years on the Peabody Charter School Board of Directors, and that's its own school district. So it is a school district board. We handle the budget, pensions, salaries, programs. So it's pretty hefty responsibility, Brown Act. And before that, on the Star King Parent-Child Workshop, which is a 501c3, it's its own entity. So I do have experience with budgets and... you know, following the law and making sure that everything pencils out. But this is my first political run for office.
Sure.
Yes.
I can imagine a school board, you have unhappy constituents. They come to your meetings and complain or petition and argue that. I can imagine that's very similar to like city council.
Yes, but mostly very supportive environment. We try to keep a really open door, have a suggestion box if people want to suggest anonymously. My whole outlook is that I want people to talk freely and to share ideas and to feel supported.
Great, great. Now, I've heard you hint at this, but I'd like to get you on the record. The inspiration to run for city council. What occurred?
Well, it was the March for Science, and I had already attended the March for Women, and I had already been following the election and been just aghast at what happened with the EPA, what happened with the DOE, and the dismantling of our environmental agencies. And I went to the March for Science. It's hard to get a scientist to march, but there were some City College students who were organizing the march and another City College professor speaking. And also there was Susan Epstein, who's on the Goleta School Board. And she just made a very convincing call for people with science backgrounds to consider running for local office. And that was the first time I really thought of my background as being a qualifier for City Council. And she mentioned that she mentors people and to meet with her if that sounded interesting. And so I set up a meeting with her, and she was very encouraging. And I wasn't still sure of my qualifications at that point, but I think because of the school board experience and just my interests in our future environmental sustainability. And so she was very encouraging. And then it just kind of went from there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when you say the school board in that context, it makes me think you were a known quantity to a lot of people then.
Oh, yes.
Too.
Yes.
So
I've been on that board 6 years.
A base of support for you as well.
Yes. Yeah. And Peabody is the largest public school in the Santa Barbara School District, aside from the junior high and the high schools, but the elementary school. Yes.
Now, just as we were exchanging cordialities, I told you that I've put you in a box called the water candidate.
Yes.
Why do I say that?
Well, probably because I talk a lot about it. I do. I mean, it's not only my official schooling background. I have a master's in geophysics, and my specialty was modeling groundwater contamination and monitoring groundwater basins. But also in teaching environmental geology, I've been following Lake Kachuma, following what's happening with our groundwater, and not just the levels of availability, but also our water quality, considering desal. And these are things I teach in my class every semester and have followed closely. So I am concerned that there's a sort of a general feeling that we're out of the drought or don't need to worry about it anymore. And
it's kind of human nature to say, yes. Oh, glad we've got that behind
yes.
us, right?
We are and optimistic we're as optimistic. A people, yeah, which I think is fantastic, but I think we also need to plan. And that's part of what environmental geology is about. It's not really environmentalism. It's more about the human interface with the earth, and then how do we understand our risks and then plan and mitigate those risks. So it's all about just being wide-eyed and informed about the actual situation so we can plan for our future. So when we think we're out of the drought and really Kachuma's at 40%, we need to plan for that. We need to mitigate and, right. and be forward-thinking about it and realistic about it too.
Mm-hmm. Kristen, I told you I'm new to Santa Barbara, not just barely 11 months now. I moved from Portland, where you could take as yes. long a shower as you wanted.
I know. I have relatives in Portland, and my sister's in Oregon, and I love to visit because it's so lush and green, right. and they don't worry about their groundwater. They just, it's, although, you know, there in Oregon, there was the drought. Was it last year, year before? And it was a little surprising. We went rafting down the Willamette, and it was quite drawn down. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, they hadn't really experienced that mm-hmm. before, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, every place is susceptible.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So when you talk about water quality, of course, I guess just anecdotally, that was a slap me in the face the minute I arrived in Santa Barbara. What factors geologically influence the quality of our water?
Well, when Kachuma was drawn down and was to the point of dead pool and you're having sludge coming up through that has to be filtered. I don't know if you noticed, but the water got very heavily chlorinated. You could smell it. You could feel it. When I did speak with a class of students at Santa Barbara High, and we were talking about water, and they were very interested in that. And one student said that her water ran brown when it came out of her tap. And so anytime you're not having a large store of fresh water and you're having to mix it in with other sources and heavily treat it, the water quality is somewhat compromised. Santa Barbara has actually great water quality. We're very fortunate that way. I mean, it's much better than any bottled water. I mean, people really should be using their tap more. And in general, it's fantastic. But when we got to that extreme situation, it definitely compromised what was there. And when we're drawing up our groundwater, which we hit the groundwater hard this last season, and drawing it up, so that's relatively pure water, but some of it has a lot of salts in it or different minerals in it that also need to be treated out.
So it's a concern relative to population growth.
Yes, yeah, it is. Right? It always is.
Mm-hmm. So let's transition into these discussions of the Santa Barbara of the future. Some people talk about higher density downtown and, housing in general is huge subject. Should we wade into that?
Oh, well, sure.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, it's always an issue. It's always been an issue. It always will be an issue. We just need to really stay on top of it and focused and be always thinking about what is the best we can do to increase affordability while still preserving our character. It's a difficult balance, and it will always be the balance that we're trying to strike in Santa Barbara.
Now, I lived in Newport Beach many years, and there was great economic inequality there. The people who, provide service to the community were living somewhere quite far away.
Yes.
But in Santa Barbara, I'm often pleased with what I see. You see less of that economic inequality here. So that's an advantage. It's not easy to perpetuate that, I suppose.
Well, a lot of people, though, they may be living in town, but they're double, quadrupled up in smaller units. And And very much so. You might have 8 people living in a 1-bedroom and they're in town. So you could check that box off and say, oh, yes, you have affordable housing in town. You live here. But the standard of living might not be what we would hope for our working people.
So, of course, many of the people who listen to me are my fellow bicycle advocates.
Yes.
And I often say no one becomes a bicycle advocate thinking that they're going to evolve into an urban planner.
Uh-huh.
But it seems irrefutable.
They go hand in hand.
They go hand in hand. Yeah.
Yes.
Because if people are living far away and commuting into the city, that creates traffic and that's not good. That reduces safety for cyclists. Mm-hmm. So, what are your thoughts on, I suppose, a general question. What are you thinking? People are talking about higher density downtown. Maybe that's where the jobs are. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that I'm not a big fan of the AUD. I've said this many times. I think we need to take a pause and think things are happening a little bit too fast and may not necessarily be meeting the goals that they originally set out to do.
And give me a definition of AUD.
Oh, yes. AUD is average unit density. So it's increasing the average unit density, the density of housing in particular zones. So there are high priority zones where these overlays have been planned over the city about where those high priority zones would be. And that's one of the areas that I think needs to be reevaluated, especially as we're moving forward with the Bike Master Plan and looking at different ways that the city could be interconnected. I think, it was a while ago that they made the high priority overlays, and I think they could be looked at. And also, now that we have ADUs, I wish I need a new...
You can't be dyslexic.
I know, it's really difficult.
Right?
ADUs as add units. How I keep it straight in my head. So I'll just call them that, add units. So that's better than granny flats because it's really not just for grannies.
Right.
And I don't want to put any one age group anywhere. I mean, we have all different... people living everywhere. So for the ad units, now that those are being mandated by the state, and we have so many of them already, I have a sense that once we actually count those units, that we're probably closer to our average unit density than we might think. And I think until we have those counted and sort of inventoried, permitted, grandfathered in, however that works the quickest, then relook at the AUDs, the dense units, and see where does it make sense now and what type of units might those be. I just don't think we're there. I think it's been 6 years. We've been building. We've had some that have really not met the goal, which was more affordable housing, and instead turned out to be luxury units.
Everybody talks about the mark.
Everybody talks about the mark.
And what is it, $3,600 a month, something like
that?
It is.
And it was, streamlined through the process, didn't have to do as much of the standard permitting. It was, some people refer to it as a giveaway, and it was out-of-town construction, out-of-town developers, and it didn't seem to really... benefit the workforce, and it sits empty a lot of it not filled. And I just think we could do more to look at that. I don't have a problem with creating affordable, and I'm not talking capital A affordable, and there's a confusion there too. When I say affordable, it's not about subsidized housing. This is about just the median income workforce in our city being able to afford a unit to live in and eventually hopefully buy at some point. And the mark just, it doesn't satisfy that goal. So I think we need to look at it. I think we need to really count our ad units and figure out where we are after that. And those units are already as Bendy says, feathered through the community. They're already in place, many of them, and the streets are handling them. There's adequate parking for them already. Many people have bikes or use alternate transportation. So Yeah, I just want to take a
moment.
Many
of those in your district?
Oh, yes, many, many. In the flat parts, frankly, not as many in the high fire zones. I mean, that is, once you get up into the hills, you do have units also that are shared units, but it seems to be really big in San Roque and the...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How would you describe your district?
Oh, I always talk about it as sort of the everything left district, that we have some nice regularly shaped districts and nicely defined downtown. And then, District 4 is the largest geographic district. It sweeps from San Roque across the Riviera, Eucalyptus Hill, Coast Village Road, includes the zoo. It's a very wide band. It's also the houses, once you get up into the hills, are farther apart, much more spread out and private. And then down in San Roque and Upper East Side, you can get more density in there. So, in District 4, I think they're very worried about fire hazard
and
safety. Yeah, it's a very big concern there, which ties into water. I mean, when I was meeting with the fire association, which I'm very proud to have their endorsement. That was a big part of the conversation was the use of water, that they can't use water in their hoses to practice. So when they're training firefighters, they're not training with water in the hoses because of the shortage. And we talked about different ways to maybe use reclaimed, recycled water for that.
That seems like a good idea. Huh?
Yes.
Reclaimed water.
All comes back to water. Practice. Here we go. Back to water again. But
well, back to your district, though.
Yes.
Such a big geography and lots of different kinds of
voters.
Neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Most voters.
The most high propensity voters, yeah.
You probably can't generalize then, right? Probably different issues. Higher density neighborhoods than some.
I haven't met anyone yet, though, who is a fan of fast, big construction. That has been, like...
I know where you were going with that.
I think
I
make that generalization.
Yeah,
most people, either they're long-term residents and they just don't like how fast it's happening
you could say that maybe it goes beyond your district, too. That's
kind
of human nature.
Yes, yes, right? I think so. And we can't stand still. We don't want to just be a museum to the past. It's just I think we need to be very careful.
What would be the, if there's a continuum there, what would be on the opposite end of that? Growth, the economic advantages of growth versus nostalgia for the way it always has been, something like that.
Something like that, yeah. And and Goleta has taken a growth model, and that's worked very well for them, for the goals that they had. And I just don't think that we have in Santa Barbara the same goals. So I think there's room for different ways to run a city and have a community. Mm-hmm. And it's people have choice of where to live and where what types of situations they want to live in. So, there are definitely high growth areas. And Santa Barbara sort of traditionally does not favor high growth. And we have a lot of historic buildings and sites and Chumash sites also. And there's a lot here to preserve without becoming antiquated.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
But then I hear many of the candidates talking about State Street.
Yes, State Street always.
Can it convert to mixed use? Now, State Street, increasingly, I think people see it under stress, the retail district.
Just today, I heard Saks is closing also.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
A huge building.
Yes, a huge building. Another one closing.
It's hard to imagine, too, what you might do with that, right? It's a big box.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't lend itself to some other.
Well, I think we need to compartmentalize the big boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And, I just went last night to, it was a first Thursday opening of Makesmith Leather Company. It's a perfect example to me of a local artisan opening a small shop where he's doing all of the work there. It's very interesting work. There were a lot of people there, of interest.
Let's give him a plug. Where is his new shop?
It's on De La Guerra, across from the museum. next to the bead shop. Okay. Yes. Yeah, it was fantastic, though. I think it's exactly what I'm talking about when I say that, you know, we can really promote smaller local businesses that bring general interest, too. Bring people downtown, interesting to tourists also.
Sure. That's been the argument against maybe malls in general, is the national brands ship their profits out, pay minimum wage, and that over the long term deteriorates the fabric of the community.
Yes.
But back to Saks, though.
Yes.
You can't take the little leather shop and put them in there. So that's going to take some thinking.
Yes,
it is. And some architectural genius, like Macy's.
Yes, true.
Is the other example. You've got two huge boxes there.
It's true. And that's, I mean, and now we're, there's 60 closures on State Street. And it's definitely a problem. I mean, I know, in conversation last night that the Make Smith shop. So that is in the historic district. And what they were looking for when renting out was particular types of businesses that would be local in that way. And the owner was saying that when he was looking at other spaces, that the question was more about the finances, the loan, the finances, and that, and not really about what the business is. And I like the model of, let's take into account what is the business and how can we support local businesses more. But yes, we're always going to have an issue with the large spaces and now how to maybe compartmentalize them, and the big question of mixed use on State Street. I think it's really interesting. I do think we need to look more into it, talk more with
maybe
the public.
Maybe the benefits of mixed use is, like, I live just half a block off State Street. Mm-hmm. So all the advantages are that I never drive my car.
Mm-hmm, which is fantastic.
Here's a confession, a bicycle advocate who doesn't ride his bike. It's so easy to walk. I can walk everywhere.
I'm a walker. I was always a walker. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not as coordinated, and so that's been my special mode, walking. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when I lived downtown at the Magnolia there, I walked everywhere. I mean, it was, and I could get from there either by walking or public transit. I mean, I would walk from there to City College just on foot, and
it's a good
through
walk.
It's a great walk. And on Tuesdays, the farmers market would be going on, and it was just it's uphill towards the end there. But if you do live downtown, I mean, there are a lot of opportunities to be able to walk. And,
right.
Yeah.
And all the benefits that accrue, right?
Mm-hmm.
That reduces congestion,
yes.
Competition for parking, street parking, all of those gifts come with that. So anyway, that's my wish for State Street, is more mixed use.
I think it would be fantastic.
Yeah.
I just think we just have to be just a little careful and just mindful, really. And it'll, I mean, the market then will adjust that, whether who lives there and how that works out. Yeah.
I think I'm part of the baby boom generation, and increasingly, well, you hear it tossed at millennials too. They want to live and work and where they can walk and ride their bike.
I've been trained not to talk about any groups that millennials or baby boomers, that they're, it's so different now that there are people who enjoy living downtown at all different ages and stages of life. And mixed use could be really attractive.
Yeah,
across the board, just depending. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing I'm so happy to hear, you know, I go to all the candidate forums.
Yes, you do. You're it's great.
And I enjoy it. I like listening. And I'm so surprised the bicycle master plan and everything related to bicycles is, like, everybody loves the idea.
Oh, yeah. It's
everybody
fantastic.
Does. There's no fight. You know, in other places I've lived, there's been a little contester. Yeah.
And it was so well researched and thought out, and a lot of buy-in from the community. And you know, it's not just bikers and cyclists who want it. Drivers want it, too. I mean, I want to know when I'm driving that I'm not a risk to the cyclist next to me. And, you know, I come through Mission Canyon quite a bit, and there isn't enough room for a cyclist. And then I want to make a buffer zone and move into the next lane. And there's really a lot to being considerate of bikers. And I think it would be, everybody wants to know that cyclists are safe, mm-hmm. and that we're helping toward that goal.
Yeah, I've heard others put it the same way. Very mm-hmm. well said, Kristen. Yeah. Now, maybe when it does, when bicycles want more space on the roadway,
yes,
and automobiles already own that space mm-hmm. in the form of parked cars a lot of the mm-hmm. time, that's where mm-hmm. the arguments start.
Yeah, there will need to be an adjustment. But on the bicycle master plan, I was just re-looking at it today, and it was overwhelming majority, over 90% of both cyclists and drivers are in favor of the number one is buffered lanes. So I was surprised by that. And mm-hmm. then on down mm-hmm. the list of mm-hmm. different mm-hmm. methods. So I'm very encouraged by that, that as a community, we're in favor of that. And then also integrating and having those interconnected. I mean, we have a lot north-south, not a whole lot east-west that connects.
Like COTA is going to be a major east-west, and mm-hmm. it's going to be buffered in parts but mm-hmm. protected in other spots.
Yes.
Yeah. Where there will be some physical barrier, like I call it a stanchion, a big, not so big, but waist height, like plastic. Mm-hmm. pole mm-hmm. in the ground to kind of convey a sense of separation and mm-hmm. discourage automobiles from wandering into the bike lane.
Mm-hmm. All good ideas.
So I was part of a group of 10. Mm-hmm. We just went to Portland. The Bike Coalition went to Portland for 5 days and five nights. What a junket.
Yeah.
And we wanted to go up there because I came from there and I knew that my new friends here would enjoy seeing mm-hmm. the infrastructure and meeting the people. And when you sit down and talk with bicycle advocates up mm-hmm. there, they're already committed to their number one standard for new bike infrastructure is we start with the protected bike lane.
Yes.
And then work backwards if we have to. Mm-hmm. That's encouraging.
Yeah.
They've been at it for a lot longer than mm-hmm. we have.
How is the bike share working there? Is it successful?
Well, I guess literally that was the reason why we went up there. UCSB talking about doing mm-hmm. bike share, and we said, mm-hmm. well, we ought to go up to Portland because they've been doing it for just over a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had some personal connections between folks here and bike share up in Portland. So two bicycle ambassadors from, they call it Bike Town, met with us the first morning we were up there and take us on a 9-mile tour showing us everything around Portland on their big orange bicycles. It was mm-hmm. really something to see. And they were quick to advertise it as, they said, just 2 months in, the most successful bike share in the nation.
Wow. Wow,
and
good
so
for them.
I've been telling people it's really simple to duplicate that mm-hmm. success here. Mm-hmm. You first start with either fluorescent orange or fluorescent green. You've got to mm-hmm. make that decision. And then you just need somebody like Nike to pay for it all.
Oh, okay. So
that's
easy.
All it takes.
That's all it takes. So easy.
Yeah. So the financial considerations.
I also want to say that like SB Bike and Coast, and they've done such a fabulous job with outreach and education. They mm-hmm. come to the schools and do bicycle rodeos and bicycle safety and distributing helmets and safe routes to school. And I really think that in that education and outreach, it is changing the culture quite mm-hmm. a bit. And I remember I was, when I was first out of high school, I was a nanny in San Francisco, and they had just started recycling program, and it was just tiny bins, like mm-hmm. tiny little milk crate mm-hmm. bins, mm-hmm. that you didn't even know yet what you could recycle. But the way they got that program going is through the kids. So the kids would come home from school. They were all like, no, 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 you cannot put that in the trash. You cannot put that. And so they pressured the family to get the bins, start using the bins. And it really came through education at the younger level. So I just wanted to mm-hmm. say, I want to really applaud that effort mm-hmm. also, because mm-hmm. we need to be getting the infrastructure in place and then also promoting the education and outreach in that, which they've done a fabulous, fabulous job with that.
Different generation, but I often heard the same kind of effectiveness of children, you know, discouraging their parents from smoking.
Yes.
Education.
Yes.
Led the way on that,
yeah,
too. Yeah. So I was going to ask, did you ride a bike as a kid?
So I grew up in a very urban environment.
Oh,
and in LA, right where Robertson and Wilshire cross.
Oh,
so
busy.
Busy. But I lived across the street from my school. That's where the workforce housing was. The duplexes were across the street. And I was very fortunate to live. My mom chose there, you know, so I could go to a good school. And so I always walked to school, and I didn't learn to ride a bike. I think that's why I'm not as coordinated now, although I love bike riding, and I go on recreational rides all the time, which my favorite one was on the island of Hawaii on a field trip, which just took last January, and riding across the lava in the dark at night. And it was, but it did definitely test my coordination skills. But so no, I had a bike, a Schwinn, when I was young, but also in our neighborhood they got stolen quite a bit. But I lived across the street from school, so. And then when I went to my early years in high school before I moved to Santa Barbara, I took public transit. So I didn't own a car until I was 22. So mostly a walker and a bus rider. I really enjoy actually riding the bus. And in Los Angeles, I really enjoyed it because you can go all the way up and down Wilshire and just see all these different neighborhoods and people. But no, I didn't have the cause to, and I didn't have the resources to at that time. It wasn't so easy to get a bike and used or as it is now. I think there are more bikes in the system, but you had to really save up for a bike. And I did have one that was stolen, and I just never quite got the full hang of it. But now I have a bike, and I really do enjoy riding. But I do worry about the safety on the street. My husband rides a lot. My kids, well, my son skateboards mostly, but for recreation as a family, we'll go to a bike path more. Mm-hmm. But he rides on the street all the time. But I worry. Mm-hmm. I do worry.
Yeah, you described how you live so close to school as a child. Mm-hmm. You could just walk.
Mm-hmm. And, which is very fortunate.
Yeah. When I lived in Newport Beach, the elementary school was exactly 1 mile away.
Mm-hmm.
And you could take a little off-road trail path to go there. But what I kind of noticed over time is that the kids who got driven to school, the principal would meet them and greet them in the driveway, also trying to keep traffic moving.
Uh-huh.
And maybe the kids that walked to school came in across the field with less fanfare.
Uh-huh, yes.
So
Straggling
he wanted
in.
To be driven to school, which broke my heart.
Yeah. Well, even when I went to high school here, I lived up near the Riviera Theater, and that's pretty steep there, but I always walked to school. So I walked down to the high school. It's over a mile, and then downhill is great, and then walking home after school would sometimes be difficult. I took art classes, had my art board and my backpack, and it was a slog uphill, but but yeah, like I say, it was mostly a walker just because of my coordination.
People talk about sales tax. What's it called? Measure C?
Measure C, yes. Measure
everybody
C.
wants more money for government. Almost everybody? Not everybody.
Well, no. I mean, I wish there was another way. It's the shortfall from the state, and you know, we've lost a lot of funds, and our roads, especially, I was talking to a cyclist last night asking what are the issues that matter to you, and he said, you know what, the roads are in bad shape, and a pothole, he had fallen, and we don't have streetlights also. He said the combination can just be deadly, that he hit a pothole, he fell, and so, you know, I know because you're a bicycle advocate, Measure C will help smooth those roads and make them safer, but it also makes them ADA compliant. It also makes it easier for a wheelchair, for strollers, for walking
in
general.
What are some of the arguments against that you hear, Kristen?
Well, it's unrestricted, so it goes into the general fund. So there is a concern that, you know, I've heard it referred to as a slush fund for city council. But really,
that's the only place it can go, I've heard.
Yes, it is the only place.
And it has to go in the general fund.
It does. Yeah. And I think if it was too restricted, then you may have situations where we have a natural disaster and some roads need to be repaired more quickly, or it would take away the flexibility. And I just think it's important to trust your city council members, but there are really only so many things we can do with those funds, and they're all for the city. I mean, that is the goal of city council, is to improve the city.
That's what it boils down to. You got to trust your elected officials to do the right thing with it.
And I actually think, I think all of us running are trustworthy. I think I feel confident that that Measure C funds will be used toward the police station, toward safe infrastructure. The other complaint to hear about it is if, you know, down the line, we have half of the city council turnover every 2 years now with the new district elections, and what about the next person? And it's just, it's going to be up to the voters to elect someone they feel is trustworthy. And the voters could vote to take away Measure C if it came to that, too. So
One of the arguments against a sales tax, I guess, just in general textbook argument, is it's, what is it?
It's regressive.
Regressive
is
the word.
Thank you. Regressive.
Yeah. So people on lower income levels are going to bear the brunt of that.
Yes. And, you know, the truth is that staples are not under the sales tax. And, you know, there's also the criticism that this will be another incentive for people to go to Goleta to shop instead. And that is, you know, that is a possibility. Goleta's not that far away. It's not that far away. And in Measure C, they did extensive polling and outreach to members of our community of all income levels who felt that overwhelmingly, that the 1% was a bearable cost and that the gains in infrastructure safety would be worthwhile. So that actually encouraged me a lot. I looked into that quite a bit before deciding how I stood on it. And, you know, I'd much rather have a progressive tax, but we do have options of other shopping. And really, we have so much tourism that it's kind of a nice way to gain revenue by people who are coming and visiting the city and to help us fix our roads at the same time and police station.
So people in Los Angeles will be paying the tax when they come up here for the weekend. Sure.
That is true.
How about, let's close with, let's talk about, you're out there in your district, this huge district, and you're going door to door at times, knocking on doors,
talking to people. Oh, yes, that's what I do in all of my spare time,
Do you have to be a real extrovert to be good at that?
Well, it helps. My hesitation is always the knocking part, because I don't always love when someone knocks on my door and I'm not expecting them. And, you know, if I can hear that they're eating dinner or something, I really hesitate at the knocking. But once someone answers the door, I really enjoy talking to people, and I love hearing what matters to people. And that part has all been...
You get a good reaction from people when they open the door?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, I can
count... You don't look like a shoe salesman.
No, and I'm not scary. I'm not scary. And so, you know, it's... I've had... actually, a lot of people are really thankful. Not everyone. I mean, some people really, you know, would rather not have someone knock on their door. And I completely understand that. So I try to be sensitive to that as much as I can.
I think of it as charming.
When someone knocks on your door?
Well, good. Nobody knocks on my door. I live inside a little gated community. But the concept of going out there and meeting your constituents face-to-face like that,
it can really
you never
change.
Know what they're going to say.
No, you don't. And I've learned so many things. Sure. And I never like to presume what a group of people or a neighborhood, and it can be so varied, different perspectives. And especially because I'm not coming from a political background, you know, I have a lot of experience in the schools and with students and, you know, City College, high school, and families, in, you know, from those ages and elementary school. So it's really great for me to be meeting with older generation and concerns there, or just different people. It's been really fantastic. I actually really enjoy that part, aside from the initial knock. I don't think I'll ever feel comfortable with that part, but but it's been mostly great. I mean, I could count like two or three doors where it was a little not as receptive, and that's okay, you know. That's okay.
Annie, as we wrap up, any big events on the calendar coming up soon? It seems like there's so many.
Yes, we're kind of coming to the end of the season of forums, because the ballots will go out next week.
On Monday,
yes. So on Tuesday night, there is the Riviera Association and Upper East Association, Montecito Association are co-hosting for District 4 a forum, which I think will be a lot of people in neighborhoods coming to see us specifically. So, and that's, as far as I know, our last scheduled forum at this point. Yeah, because it's it's go time now.
Yeah, it's go time. Now, how about, here's a thought, is you're running again. There are two other candidates for District 4. You know, they all seem like nice people.
We all are. Yes, I do. Yeah.
So that's good news for Santa Barbara. Isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we have a wealth of qualified candidates who
caring people.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great for the city.
Yeah, and I just think voters will need to look at some of our, we each have differences and on some major issues too, and different expertise that we're bringing, and different perspectives. And
as we wrap up, Kristen, would you like care to state, make your case for why?
Why you should vote for me?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm a different kind of candidate. I mean, I think our city council is very well represented with, we have some attorneys, we have some small business owners, we have a lot of different perspectives there. But I think the city council would benefit from having someone with a science background. I mean, we really are going to be tackling issues related to a rapidly changing climate. And we've had microbursts, floods, also drought and fire risk. And those are my particular area of expertise. And I think the council would benefit from that perspective. And I also have been very involved in the education system as an educator, but also an advocate and volunteer, and as a school board president. And I think that's I've experienced the city as a high schooler walking to school, and as a young person without a car, and now as a family member, small business owner. I just bring a different perspective that I think city council would benefit from. And I ask for your vote.
Kristen, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, we're back in the studio. And just before I say goodbye, I'd like to invite you once again, come by the website, SantaBarbaraCyclist.com, where you'll find interviews with other candidates too. And of course, it's all very timely. Ballots will be in your mailbox in just days. So get to know the people in your district. Well, that's it for tonight's show. Thanks so much for listening, and good night.